The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome in to the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington for a Monday. Icy day in parts of the state, so be careful out there. Just that up-and-down weather that we're going through, but it's really been, I guess, a comparatively mild winter weather-wise, a little tumultuous basketball-wise, and we'll talk about that today here on the show after Kentucky loses at Texas A&M 85-74. First time in the Calipari era that they have lost three in a row. They're now 500 in the league at 6-6 and 17-8 overall, and headed to play SEC leader Auburn on Valentine's night down on the plains of Alabama. So we will chat about that today with our lineup of guests, led off by Seth Greenberg from ESPN, Mark Story from the Lexington Herald Leader, and then we'll shift gears and talk a little baseball, because baseball season is coming. The start of the season is later this week, and we'll get a little update on the upcoming campaign from Coach Nick Mingione, his team preseason top 10, and just about every poll that I've seen, got some players that are first-team all-conference, strong pitching staff coming back. Tristan Pompey leads the returnees of the starting eight, and a lot of high hopes for Kentucky baseball and what will be the final season at the Cliff. And we'll talk with Coach Nick Mingione to wrap up our show today. Guest lineup each day on the show is presented by Sleep Outfitters. You can interact with us via Twitter at Leach Report, email leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080 toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And the box score doesn't tell the story on Kentucky's loss down at College Station. If you just look at the final stats and you didn't watch the game, you would look at it and say, that looks pretty good. Kentucky must have played fairly well down at Texas A&M. But if you watch the game, it certainly didn't feel that way. I was just talking with Ryan Lemon a moment ago before the show started that in watching a little bit of the game yesterday, it was reminiscent of the Tennessee loss down in Knoxville, when Kentucky played very well in the first half. I think had led by 8 or 9 down there. They led by 4 on Saturday night at Texas A&M. And then the opponent comes out and punches them in the mouth in the second half, and Kentucky didn't respond. And A&M, had shot too many threes in the first half, came back out and was looking to get it inside and to get out in transition. And Kentucky fed all of that with 6 turnovers in the first 6 or 7 minutes of the second half. And it just spiraled out of control quickly. After the game, John Calipari said he's not cracking, and he believes his team still wants this, and so he's going to keep pushing. He certainly looks exasperated, and that's understandable, but he's looked that way at other times in his career here, and they've come out of it. So you can, choose to keep the faith or not, but I have seen it turn when it looked as bad as this later than this, and that was 2014. I went back and looked at that season today, and they were down at South Carolina, the game Cal got tossed in 2014, and were getting run out of the gym. Now they ended up coming back and getting closer than they did with their rally down at A&M on Saturday, but still it was a game in which they were thoroughly dominated for most of the contest, and they came out of that. So, but a lot of things have to change for that to start to happen. The bracket committee, or the NCAA tournament committee, came out with their first bracket yesterday, projections at this point, with a month before Selection Sunday. And I don't think there are any great shocks. Michigan State is at 3 was a little surprising to me. I think the ones were Virginia, Villanova, Purdue, and Xavier. Jerry Palm, after the committee did their top four in each region, Jerry Palm, who's the bracketologist for CBS, came on the show and projected the rest of the tournament, and he had Kentucky as a 7 seed. Joe Lenardi does the bracketology. He's the father of bracketology, if you will, and he's with ESPN, of course. And I actually am going to talk to Joe this afternoon, and we'll have that on the show tomorrow. So if you've got a question, tweet him in, but we'll try to work some of those in. But going to talk to Joe later today about the brackets and where Kentucky at the moment fits into it and where they could fit into it. E.J. Montgomery, the big kid from down in Georgia, has set a visit for Kentucky February 24th, the weekend of the Missouri game. He's going to UNC today, according to reports, and going to visit Duke on Wednesday. And then he's coming to Kentucky at the end of the month. UK women lost to number 2 Mississippi State yesterday, 74-55, to fall to 12-14, 4-8 in the league. Macy Morris had 21. UK softball bounces back from a couple of losses to start the season to beat New Mexico State 10-2 and avoid getting swept to start the season. And we close this opening segment with a sad note. Oscar Combs just tweeting out moments ago that Terry Mobley, former Wildcat basketball player, a longtime fixture in the administration at UK, was the interim AD for a time between Larry Ivey and Mitch Barnhart, and so got to spend some time with Terry on road trips in those days. Always enjoyed his company. Just a classy, classy guy. Hit a big shot to I think it was beat Duke in the Sugar Bowl Classic down in New Orleans back in the early 60s. And we send out condolences to his family on the passing of Terry Mobley. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Coach Seth Greenberg, when we come back on the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email LeachReport@gmail.com.
Quarter past the top of the hour. Coach Seth Greenberg joins us from ESPN. You see him on the Game Day show each weekend. And, Coach, before we get to Kentucky, let's talk about the mock bracket that came out yesterday from the selection committee, their first one, and got the top four seeds from them for each region. Look good to you?
You know, I'll tell you, the top four seeds I had no problem with. I mean, you know, Xavier a little bit, you know, you could create some arguments. I mean, I think at the end of the day, Michigan State at 3 was, even though they don't have quadrant one wins, you know, I see them as at worst a 2 who could play themselves into a 1, especially after the win against Purdue. And I know it was at home. They're healthy right now. I thought that I was surprised with Oklahoma losing 5 of their last 6. I understand they have 5 quadrant one wins and that's great. But they haven't done much on the road. They won one on neutral court against Wichita State. I think they had one other road win of significance. So, you know, when you get past the top 8 or so, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's not much that differentiates at this point. The Big 12, they're beating each other up, so they have good quadrant one wins and they have losses. I thought the committee obviously rewarded UNC for the strength of their record and the strength of their schedule. I think they rewarded Oklahoma for the strength of their schedule. So that was pretty significant. That you know, who you played was well represented. And then you know Cincinnati, whose schedule hasn't been great, but they had that road win at UCLA, which is a good win. And they only have 2 losses, and they dominated their league thus far, and dominated again last night on the road at SMU, and they're undefeated at home. So it was kind of, it is what it is. It's going to change. People are going to beat each other up, and that's just the way it is. No one has separated themselves, and this is going to be a different basketball season for sure, and one that's going to create an incredible opening weekend of the NCAA tournament, and even the second weekend, because there's going to be some outliers that are going to roll into that thing.
I mean, you were at Virginia, and they lose when they're poised to go to number one to a rival, first home loss, and we've seen not only teams losing to ranked teams, they're losing to them on their home courts, that it just seems like there's no way this is going to be anything but a really chaotic tournament this year.
Yeah, no one really, I mean, every team has a scar. I mean, that's really what it comes like Virginia, they run their mover blocker offensively, and quite honestly, they had no pace to their offense. They really struggled scoring. Now, they're a little bit better in the second half. Virginia Tech can really shoot the 3 ball, you know, Well, I was in Virginia, turned it over, and then they were late on closeouts, and Vincent made shots, and they got a good win. But if you look at last week, I mean, you saw a lot of teams lose at home. I mean, it was incredible, the quality of teams that lost on their home court. So, you know, Auburn lost to Texas A&M, a Texas A&M team that's playing themselves into the NCAA tournament. Nebraska's playing themselves into the NCAA tournament. As we look around, the one thing you realize is some of these teams are just flat playing themselves in by winning games. And there are a lot of spots available because there's very few mid-majors that are going to be in the conversation this year.
Let's talk about the Wildcats now, who certainly have scars, probably would be called open wounds at the moment with the way this is going. Let's just start with this. Tell me what you're seeing. I mean, you were around these guys back in the summer. You know Cal well. So what are you seeing right now?
You know, I like what Cal's approach is. Now, we were flying back, so I didn't see the game. We actually followed it on the ticker as we were flying back. But I think his approach needs to be, don't worry about the result right now. Don't worry about the opponent right now. Worry about us. He's got to figure out his 8-man rotation, his 9-man rotation. He's got to figure out, this team and continue to empower this team. But most importantly, they're going to be an NCAA tournament team unless they fall flat on their face. So what do they have to be? They got to be the best version of themselves come March. So, yeah. Like, everyone losing their mind, and I understand that. That's part of the magic and the beauty of the Big Blue Nation. Everyone losing their mind, that's great. But the reality is that they're not playing in the NCAA tournament to try to advance to get to an Elite Eight, a Sweet 16, a Final Four right now. What they need to do is figure out a way to fix themselves. And fix themselves means playing a little bit with a little bit better flow. Fix themselves means playing with a little bit better trust. Fix themselves means playing harder for longer periods of time. Duke's going through it, and I got to be honest, Duke's freshman class is better than Kentucky's freshman class. And they're going through it. All right, they don't have a chemistry. Trayvon Duval is going through the same thing Hamid Diallo is going through right now. So, again, look, Cal's made this thing look so easy for so long. I mean, that's the thing. So the expectation is unrealistic. So now you've got your fans saying, oh, you know, Cal, and this one and done thing. Well, wait a second. When you're national champions, you got, four Final Fours. You're going to have a hiccup along the way because, you know, some of these teams and this team that much younger has not found its chemistry and its trust yet. The pieces maybe don't fit as well. The pieces might not even be as good. Well, they aren't as good, but this still is a good has a chance to be a good team, and it still has 3 weeks to become that team. And for everyone to think, well, you know, Cal's, you know, he's sitting down, he's throwing in the towel, that's asinine because he spends night and day. Look at the dude. He looks awful. I mean, he looks like he hasn't slept in a month. He's doing anything and everything in his power to try to figure this thing out. He's meeting with players individually. He's meeting with them collectively. They're doing film. He's trying to figure out how to push him. That's what coaches do when they're in this situation. And he's no different. There's no magic wand, though, that he can, you know, shake over the team that all of a sudden tomorrow they're going to be better. Winning at A&M was going to be hard. A&M's front court's more physical. They're playing better. They had a good win at Auburn. It's just the way it is. They've got to fight through this. They've got to fight through it together. And people, I like what he said, people got to get behind them. It's easy to point a finger. It's harder to come together.
Yeah, he used the word trust at one point in his post game on Saturday night. I have said, and you can kind of speak to this as a coach, how you get teams to come together. That players, I think, when the things aren't going well for a team or even for themselves, the one thing they always are going to believe in the longest is themselves. These guys have gotten to a level because they're very good and they've believed in themselves. But they need to get them to be able to believe in the other guys around them, right?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Like, here's the thing. They all have an experience where they've had success. And look, some of these guys aren't believing or have questions now because they watch and they say it looks so easy. I mean, you know, they watch on TV when they're high school seniors and they see what they've been able to do at Kentucky and they've seen the success and guys going to the league and this and that. And they go, oh, yeah, I'm as good as that guy. They don't realize once you get there, it's not that easy. They've made it look easy. It's really hard. And what they've made look easy is takes hard work. It takes trust. And trust not only in yourself, trust in allowing yourself to be coached, trust in your teammates, trust in dealing with adversity, trust in dealing with the pressure of playing in Kentucky. He says it all the time. Kentucky's not for everyone. Because, you know, it's not easy to be a Kentucky basketball player right now. There's John's on him. The Big Blue Nation's on him. The expectations on him. There's a lot of things, and you've got to have a hard outer shell to deal with it.
Yeah, guys feel like the weight of the world is on their shoulders. It's hard to play that way.
Yeah, it is hard to play that way. And, they've got to pass the ball and trust each other. And I know what John's trying to do because innately they're not sharing the ball. So he's trying to let them attack in transition and then try to make them get in offense. The problem is when they get into offense, because he's trying to get them to trust each other, they're not making plays. They're getting to the end of the offense. And that's that balancing act, quite honestly, is that, you know, if he trusted them like other teams, like if they were innately maybe just had better feel or unselfish, they'd be running that break, getting in the dribble drive, getting in the spreads, getting into everything quicker. But because the ball won't go bop, 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 now he's making them do it, which is getting them a little bit even more tentative, and they're playing with more short clocks. And it's such a hard balance when you have these young, talented teams but that don't have that trust. And that's what he's fighting to get them to develop that trust so he doesn't have to play call. Because John's best teams play on concept and instinct, except when he's running circle. When he's running circle, he's running time, he's trying to post it. You know, they'll have three or four sets where they're, you know, they run that little set where they try to get Kevin posted up off of that hawk cut. And then they have the other one where they put him in the stack and he reads the stack. But it's hard because innately the ball's just not moving. It's just getting stuck too much. So he's making a move it. But by making a movement, maybe in a lot of ways, they're taking away a little bit of that creativity.
Coach, always appreciate the time. And we'll see you on the game day on Saturday and down the road somewhere. Thank you.
You got it, pal. Thank you.
At Seth on Hoops on Twitter, and see him on Saturdays on the College Game Day show. We are heading to a break, 25 after the top of the hour. Hear a little bit from Coach Cal's postgame when we come back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Welcome back into the show. Let's hear a little bit from Coach Cal's postgame on Saturday. A little bit of edited down version of a couple of things that Cal and I talked about after the loss at Texas A&M.
You don't start the half ready to fight, and what happens is the other team makes their run, and all of a sudden, you know, you let go of the rope. You know, you can't have the kind of breakdowns we're having, and you can't have a guy that if he's not playing well, he doesn't have any fight in his body. And that's what we got right now, and that's that young, immature, inexperienced guy. Searching for a leader, you know who our best player is, and it's not even close who our best player is. But I'm not sure he's in that mode to lead and drag other guys with him. But we got to get some other guys playing and being more confident to drive it and do the things they have to do. But we will see.
I'll ask you a question. I think it was Jerry Tipton asked you in the post game. Why do you believe these guys can still turn this around?
Because I've been doing this 30 years and I'm with them every day. Their immaturity, their lack of experience, they want to do well, but when they are not playing well, they can't give anything to the team. And that's what we got to get, you know, them to just say, you got to lose yourself in this team. You can't worry about how you're playing. Worry about how you're playing for us. There were plays in this game, again, where I'm asking guys to do certain things and they just do what they want. Well, I called a timeout. Why'd you do that? It's not what I asked you to do. You're doing it because you're trying to play for yourself instead of us. Those are the things. They're teaching moments. They're very painful right now. And again, you know, they did bank two threes. Yeah. You know, there were some things that happened, but, you know, we never gave ourselves a real chance to win the game.
But despite all that, you said you believe these guys still want it.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I told them, you know, I'm not cracking. I'm not wavering. I just get back to work. It's what I do.
Coach Cal, on his birthday, not a very nice birthday for the Kentucky head man after the loss Saturday to Texas A&M. We're halfway home. We'll talk more about this with Mark Story from the Herald Leader when we come back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Or Billy Kennedy. And you say, what? Or Billy Kennedy. They're red hot. They just beat Kentucky. And the problem is he's got more disciplinary issues to deal with for his Texas A&M team that has had a boatload of those this season, plus injuries. J.J. Caldwell has been dismissed from the team, and fellow guard, freshman guard J.J. Chandler has been suspended. They were arrested early Sunday on charges of marijuana possession. This according to multiple reports. Caldwell's been a frequent offender, so he has been kicked off the team. Chandler suspended. Looked like Dwayne Wilson may have been lost. Kid who has really battled through a lot of knee problems, and they had to take him to the locker room in the second half Saturday. So A&M is rolling right now, but still having some off-the-court issues. Mark Story joins us now from Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com. By the way, excellent job, another excellent job putting together the Kentucky Sports Figure of the Year balloting, and it was a nice event and a very deserving winner.
Yeah, it was, I don't know about you, Tom, I thought the top of the candidates this year, we had, you know, Justin Thomas, who was the 2017 Kentucky Sports Figure of the Year winner, and what he did, you know, winning a PGA Tour major, the third Kentuckian to do that. You had Lamar Jackson coming back off a Heisman Trophy campaign and actually having a statistically better season. And then Brendan McKay, the Louisville baseball star, who essentially had exactly the same resume that A.J. Reed had, the former Kentucky baseball star, when he won the Sports Figure Award in 2014, except McKay also led his team to the College World Series. I thought the top of that ballot was just incredibly strong, maybe the strongest since I've been voting, and I've been voting quite a while now.
Yeah. No, I agree. When I filled it out, I voted for Justin Thomas. Just that was such a strong year that he had. But I think I put the baseball player from Louisville second because just kind of thinking, this A.J. Reed won with this kind of resume.
Yeah, it was. It was really strong. And I think in most years you have looked at any of those three, and probably any one of those three would have seemed a clear winner. To have all three of those resumes in the same year, it was really strong.
And Benny Snell did enough for that could have been a contender in some years.
Yeah. Benny Snell, you know, finished fourth and, you know, was pretty strong. And I actually wrote a column Sunday looking ahead to the next year. And I think Benny, you know, if the team does well, and, you know, I think he has a very realistic chance to become the all-time leading rusher and UK football history, I think Benny has a chance to be the winner the next time.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Nick Mangione is going to be our next guest on the show. Could be a contender if things go as well as people hope, or one of his players. Mark, let's talk a little bit about Kentucky basketball. Obviously, it is a crisis moment for the Wildcats. They have been through them before. Cal said on Saturday night he believes his team still is fighting and wants this. And you wrote a column recently for the Herald Leader about misconceptions you see about when fans talk about the one-year players, and that one of them is that they don't care. So I think it certainly should be believable that these guys still want this.
Yeah, I understand. You know, I think there are some legitimate, if not criticisms, concerns about the one and done, just as a recruiting strategy and, you know, sort of where Kentucky's at. But the two I hear most often that I think don't make an awful lot of sense is that that Calipari's is only interested in putting players in the NBA and isn't trying to win. And I know some of that is based on things he said, but I mean, it's marketing. He's, you know, trying to, you know, get, when they send good players to the NBA and make a big deal out of that, they're doing that so they can get more good players. And the reason they want good players is so they can win games. And then I've never seen any indication, you know, as a rule, that the one and done players at Kentucky are not super invested in winning. And I base that somewhat on being in the locker room, you know, when the season has ended. And I remember 2 years ago in Des Moines, after Indiana beat Kentucky in the NCAA tournament, Jamal Murray was inconsolable. He was underneath a towel just, you know, sobbing, you know, was really upset. And then last year, after Luke May hit the shot for North Carolina, you know, De'Aaron Fox had tears, you know, sort of unshed tears in the corner of his eye. Malik Monk you know, was the same situation. So, you know, I've never seen any indication that the kids don't really care or aren't really invested in having team success when they're here.
When you watch the game Saturday night, I mean, for a first half that was, if you're a Kentucky fan, pretty encouraging. They were still having trouble making shots, which had been a problem, but they were playing well enough defensively that they were ahead by four. And then it was like one of those scenes from a movie where you open the closet door and everything falls down on top of you in the first 10 minutes of the second half. What were you thinking as you were watching it?
Well, you know, the thing that is interesting to me about this team is that's happened several times on the road. You know, they played well at the first half at Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and then it got away from them in the second half. And, you know, they played well, you know, for really 28 minutes or so at South Carolina, and then it got away from them. And I can't help but wonder if some of that is not having any real veterans and, you know, guys that, you know, sort of can, you know, feel, recognize game situations and, all right, you know, we need to slow this down or we need to get, you know, this is where we need to really get a good shot. Just maybe that recognition is lacking.
Yeah, I mean, the team that this one probably most resembles in terms of reliance on freshmen is 2014, and that team at least could throw it into Julius Randle if they're struggling and try to get a bucket. And this team is, at the moment, their best offense is just Shea Alexander off the dribble getting into the lane. And then they don't have, as you said, the like that 2014 group experience to rely on, even less than that team did. But I was looking back at that team today. They had a stretch about as bad as what Kentucky's in now, later than this, and pulled out of it. So it's possible. What would you need to see to make you think it could start to happen?
Well, to me, the concern right now, you know, having lost three in a row and in a very difficult schedule, with a very difficult schedule ahead, is just the confidence. And, you know, I thought an interesting point was made after the game that the longer it takes sort of get this going, the harder it is to do so. You know, I think it's really important, you know, of the next three games, if they could win two, which would mean winning a road game either at Arkansas or at Auburn, and then, you know, taking care of business at home against a good Alabama team, I think if they could win two, they're in good shape. I think that would, you know, have them in good shape to get into the tournament. So, you know, and I don't completely rule that out, but obviously, it would behoove them to sort of pull out of the tailspin.
They, in the second half, after the onslaught by A&M, I think they had six turnovers, I think, in the first 6 or 8 minutes of the second half to fuel that run for the Aggies. Kentucky did end up shooting about 54-55% from the field in the second half, and they had been struggling to shoot even 40% for two and a half or so games. Do you take anything positive from that?
Well, it's hard to know off such a small sample size. You know, that thing, it's funny when a game gets away from a team. A&M banked in 2 3-pointers.
Yes, from straight out the top of the key.
Yeah, I mean, when that starts happening, you know, usually it's probably not your night. You know, I think, you know, if Kentucky could establish some offensive identity, if they could figure out, you know, somebody on the block, you know, it looked like it was going to be P.J. Washington, and, you know, he hasn't played as well lately. I just think part of the problem is they, as you said, other than, you know, Shea, you know, driving and creating himself, they still really don't have any offensive identity. And if, you know, they could get some of that worked out, I think a lot of problems would fix themselves.
Because they had the second half at West Virginia and had the game against Louisville are probably the two most noteworthy examples, do you look at that and think, okay, because of those performances, fans could rightfully still hold out some hope that this could turn around, or is it just, does it at some point hit a stage where it's just the hole's too deep to dig out of?
No, I don't think you can completely let go of the rope. Partly for the reasons you mentioned, there have been some good moments. You know, I think you also go go back to the 2014 team, and I don't think you can, you know, every time you have a struggling year, it's not going to, you know, end up as well as that did, but you also can't discount it because, as you pointed out, that 2014 team, they got run out of the gym in the last game of the season at Florida and, you know, lost a really bad home game to Arkansas, a game they sort of gave away. And, you know, as long as you do enough to make the NCAA tournament, which, you know, this team probably has some work it still needs to do, as long as you do that, and if you have some talent, there's a chance. And the other thing about, you know, this particular season, you look at who are the projected number one seeds are, you know, all these teams have sort of a history of kind of March, of not being March certainties. You look at Xavier, who's never been to the Final Four. Virginia hasn't been to a Final Four since 1984. You know, Purdue under Matt Painter has never won more than two NCAA tournament games. And even Villanova, which won the championship 2 years ago, has also gone out in the first weekend of the tournament 6 of the last 7 years. So, you know, if you get in the tournament, there's going to be opportunity, or at least it looks like that. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't think you can give up on the season.
Mark, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Mark's story, you can read him at KentuckySports.com and the Lexington Herald Leader. We are heading to a break. 15 away from the top of the hour, it's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Coach Nick Mingione when we come right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
UK baseball opens up the new season on Friday down in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And Coach Nick Mingione joins us to talk about the start of a new season. And everywhere I see, Coach, they've got you ranked in the top 10. So exciting times for your program. First time season tickets have already been sold out. So you pleased with how the lead up to the season has gone?
I have. You know what, Tom? I'm just really excited about this group because we got enough guys, we have enough guys back that saw how we were two wins from Omaha a year ago. And I think we all know how important experience is, right? And the fact that we got some older guys that were that close and they're back, and, you know, now the national media are, you know, all about the Wildcats. You know, I think we're ranked number 8 in every single poll. So the guys have been really focused since we've been back and had a great, you know, month and a half of practice, so looking forward to Friday for sure.
Who are the guys that are kind of those returnees that are setting the tone for your team?
Well, when you think about on the mound, Justin Lewis is a guy that was an 11th round draft pick and decided to come back. That was huge for us. And then you think about Sean Jelly, the reigning SEC Pitcher of the Year, which, by the way, was our first one ever, and Zach Thompson. So you think about those three guys, those were the three guys that finished in the weekend rotation for us. So excited about those guys. And then, of course, positionally, Troy Squires and Cole Cottom behind the plate. Those two catchers are good as any two catchers that anybody has anywhere. So you think about those, and you think about a Luke Becker, who's a senior. Tristan Pompey is the returning All-American. So those seven guys have really, really done well for us, and we're going to expect them to carry a huge load.
Who are the newcomers that you're going to lean on heavily to start the season?
Well, you know, Tom, it's crazy. We lost our, and you know this, but we lost our starting first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, third baseman, left fielder, and center fielder. Let that sink in, right? I mean, we lost our entire infield and all but one outfield spot. So what we did was in recruiting, we went out and recruited a bunch of junior college players and guys that we thought would be able to help fill in. But Luke Becker slides over from third to second base, so he'll help out there. And then some of our new players, Trey Dawson is a junior college transfer from Chipola Junior College, who won the national championship a year ago, won the gold glove out in the College World Series. So he'll start out at shortstop for us. We have some other guys. You know, Luke Heyer is a guy that got some playing time last year, who's played some third base, played some outfield. Ben Oklinski is another junior college outfielder from Phoenix College out in Arizona, who won the Division II Gold Glove Award. Just really good defender, really special offensive player. So those guys obviously are going to play a key role for us.
There's a lot of excitement about your team. I mentioned the season ticket sales, and there's just a buzz that you guys created at the end of last season that is certainly carrying over. And, you know, you had to kind of sell a vision when you came in, but it has to be thrilling for your players to kind of see some of the payoff of that, that what they accomplished and the work they're doing. They're not only getting recognized by media, but, you know, they can feel the love here at home.
That's been unbelievable, the Bing Blue Nation, Tom. You're exactly right. That special night in June on that Monday night, about 1:30, I think it was, when we finally won that baseball game, to celebrate and do something that's never been done before was special. And our players could feel how much the Big Blue Nation wanted us to win that game and to do something that's never been done. And you know what, Tom? I think it's been really simple. It's been six words, really. It's been family, winning, and development are the first three words. The most important thing in our program is our family, which is our team. And then just how important it was for them to win in all areas of their life. And then obviously the development piece. And the last three words are the student, the person, player. And these guys have really bought into those six words. And it's kind of helped shape, form our culture. And the community has rallied behind us as well. So it's been really neat to see so far.
Playing a home game, I think, earlier than I can ever remember. Next Wednesday, the 21st, you'll host Xavier. But it starts down in Spartanburg this weekend. You got Wofford on Friday and UC Upstate for a couple of games on Saturday and Evansville on Sunday. Talk to us a little bit about how you put together the schedule this year.
Sure. So, you know, one thing I love to do is early in the season, I love doing road trips. I love there's something neat about getting your team on a bus and them spending, you know, whether it's we'll go 5.5, 6.5 hours down to Spartanburg. And, you know, when you think about both legs of the trip, you're into about 13 hours of having your team in one little area. And I just think that's really important. I think when you're trying to build a family, to have everybody together for long periods of time like that and for them to develop their relations deeper with the players and coaches is really important. So we start out down there. We're actually going to play two games on a Saturday, which the reason why I did that, we're actually going to play four that first weekend, as you mentioned. That is very similar to how a regional might play out, right? We just experienced that last year. There's going to be a time where you may or may not have to play a doubleheader. And as you know, we had to beat Indiana and then NC State in order to force that playoff game. So I think anytime you can put your team in a position where, hey, we've already been here, we've done this, we know what it's like to play 18 innings in one day is really powerful. So that's why we decided to do that as far as the opening weekend goes.
Coach, best of luck. We'll be talking to you throughout the season, but best of luck on getting it started on the right foot on Friday.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you to the Big Blue Nation for the season tickets, and now the next step is come out and see us. Thank you. Go Cats.
Coach Nick Mangione, and we're heading to a break, and we'll wrap it up after this timeout. Leach Report Radio Network and our Donato Slice of Wildcat History, Josh Harrelson, Bud Dupree celebrating birthdays today, and on this day, 1968, number 8 Kentucky over number 5 Tennessee in a showdown at Memorial Coliseum. 60-59, Kentucky prevailed. Mike Casey was 17. Balls led by future NBA star Tom Boerwinkel with 18. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Tomorrow we'll have Joe Lenardi, ESPN's Adam Amin, and Larry Vaught. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to Leach.